Case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Walker against Armco Steel. I think you may proceed now.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of this honorable court, Fred Walker was a carpenter, and on August 22, 1975, he was driving an Armco nail into a piece of wood, and it shattered, putting out his eye. Came to my firm, and eventually we filed a suit on August 19, 1977, within the two-year statute of limitation in the federal court, and the summons were, lost. We thought the marshal had them, the clerk had them, and we did a file review some 90 days later. We found them in our filing cabinet and took them down there. I want to be square with you. And
in your filing
cabinet? Yes, sir. I can't find who, no one will admit in the firm ever bringing them back, but anyway, we find them in an unmarked folder in the filing cabinet on a file review. That's how we find out that they didn't get to the marshal. In any event, we take the summons are taken to the marshal, and Armco is served some 104 days later. Now, Oklahoma has a statute that they must be served within 60 days beyond the statute of limitation. Part of their statute, it's a question of whether or not it's procedural or substantive, I guess. And, of course, under Rule 3, you don't have that problem. Anyway, the service was had, and then the Reagan case came like a falcon out of the skies and struck down our lawsuit. And here we are.
Well, the Reagan case was decided somewhat before your lawsuit, wasn't
it? Yes, sir. And it was, the Hanna case, is a grill barn burner on our side, but it didn't really overrule Reagan. So, anyway, just
there are only nine of us up here, too.
Anyway, Judge Doyle at the Tenth Circuit, when he wrote his opinion, the last paragraph states, the Supreme Court would perform a great service if we're to clear away the dilemma which exists as a result of the conflict between Reagan and Hanna. He says, we recognize that decisions are frequently allowed to die on the vine, so to speak. We also recognize that in such instance, death does not, as a practical matter, take place. If, however, Reagan was intended to die a natural death, it failed to happen. So what we're here, I'm attempting to persuade...
Mr. Manners, you come not to praise Reagan, but to bury it, I think.
I come to bury Reagan if possible. Now, Chief Justice Warren in the Hanna case wrote a spectacular decision, well-reasoned, well-thought-out, and Justice Harlan in his concurring...
And carefully saved Reagan. Well-thought-out.
Well-thought-out, carefully saved Reagan. But Justice Harlan stated in his concurring opinion that he thought Reagan was wrong. And, you know, going back at the beginning, under 28, section 2072, when they enacted the rules, the federal rules, it said, all laws in conflict with such rules should be of no further force or effect, unless, of course, they invade the substantive portion. So really what we're talking about is whether or not the federal rules of commencement of an action and service are procedural or substantive. You know, I'm from Oklahoma, and I don't like to say this. Basically speaking, we've got an awful good state there. But I'm not much in favor of a service statute where your defendant can hide out for 61 days, and you've lost your case. If you can't find him in 61 days or prove he's out of the state, you're just dead in the water down there. I don't think it was intended that the federal rules for the courts of all of the federal courts here, I don't think it was intended that the 60-day...
I don't see why you put all that weight on distance. I think you'd have a very far trying to find somebody in Manhattan, and that's a lot smaller than Oklahoma City.
We got more brush down there in our country than the judges to hide in. This is not the first time I've run afoul of the 60-day deal. Sometimes you just can't find them, and you're dead. But this case, I feel particularly bad because Mr. Walker had an injury, and somehow or other, like something dropping from the skies, I find the summons in a filing cabinet back in the office on the file review. So.
Well, you wouldn't be arguing this to any Oklahoma court, would you, that you didn't like the law the legislature had enacted? Or?
No, sir, because Oklahoma courts are not covered by Rule 3. This is a federal question.
Right. And
federal question.
What is the principle you want us to adopt?
I want you to adopt the principles elucidated in HANA.
What are those?
These are that for uniformity, the federal rules should govern service. This case turns on Rule 4, 1D, which is where the statute required that you thrust it directly into the hand of an executor and they left it with his wife. And the court held that under the federal rules that the rules having to do with service would apply.
What if the federal rules had no provision which was a counterpart to Oklahoma's provision here?
What would I do? I would be defending a case of malpractice. That's what I'd be doing, probably.
You know, you say there must be an affirmative federal rule of civil procedure,
yes,
covering,
sir,
this point.
Without Federal Rule 3 and Federal Rule 4, I have no standing.
You don't urge us to go back to Swift against Tyson or the days of the federal common law?
No, sir. The federal rules set up for the maintenance and the handling of the federal cases in this country, I think, should be controlling of cases filed in the federal courts. Now, I'm embarrassed, and I should be, that this matter happened at my law firm. But I think under the pure question of law that Fred Walker's entitled to relief. I think that the federal rules, Rule 3, should govern what commences an action. The rule states it very succinctly. It says that it's told when the case is filed under Federal Rule 3. Now, you know, Rule
4. Does Federal Rule 3 say told?
Well, let me get it exactly, Your Honor. Rule 3, commencement action. A civil action is commenced by filing complaint with the court. That's what it says specifically. Now, Rule 4 puts the burden upon the clerk. It says, upon filing of the complaint, the clerk shall forthwith issue a summons and deliver it for service to the marshal or person specially appointed to serve it.
Well, what is there in the rule, though, that says that the beginning of an action is just the filing of a complaint satisfies a state's statute of limitations? It may start the action.
It doesn't say that.
What?
It says, quote, a civil action is commenced by filing a complaint with the court.
Well, I know a civil action is commenced, but why would that necessarily? What if the state law said just specifically that, and by the way, we mean what we say, just the starting of an action does not satisfy our statute of limitations?
Well, Your Honor,
there has to be some other event before the statute of limitations is satisfied.
The Oklahoma state law does provide that a action is commenced by the filing of a petition. But it has an additional statute two sections down that says that if you can't get service with due diligence within 60 days, that you're just through.
Well, I know, but why? What is there in Rule 3 to prevent the state from having such a provision?
There is nothing
to
prevent this.
This is a matter of state law, state statute of limitations.
Excuse me, Your Honor. There's nothing to prevent the state from having that law. My position is that under the federal rules, Fred Walker's entitled to the federal rule law. under Hannah, which goes into Erie. And I'm sure everybody's familiar. I think you were on the court when Hannah was decided, Your Honor.
I understand. Reagan wasn't overruled.
No, but a lot of people thought it was. I've got a beautiful Second Circuit opinion here. And Judge Doyle says he prefers the federal rules. Really, we're talking about making uniformity. Every citizen...
You don't have uniformity on the substantive law in diversity cases.
I don't believe that it's substantive, Your Honor. I think
no,
that...
I say you don't on the substantive law.
No, sir.
What you want is the traditional, the Erie rule on the substantive law, but the federal rule on the procedure.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What's the virtue of uniformity, as you put it, on the procedural side, when basically you're dealing with practitioners in Oklahoma City or Tulsa who practice in both the federal and state courts?
Well, it would make it a lot easier on the circuit courts, for one thing, because they would not have the higgledy-piggledy mess of each state having a different set of semi or quasi, a substantive or procedural laws. A procedural and substantive is a difficult question at best. But if you file a case in a court, you ought to go by that court's procedure. What commences an action, how service is made.
What if the statute of limitations in Oklahoma said that the statute of limitations will run until a complaint is served? It just says that, unless the complaint is served within the period, the case is over. Rule 3 wouldn't prevent that, would it?
Well, Rule 4 did in the Hanna case.
Why? No, it didn't. That isn't what the...
Well, that case, Your Honor,
said there.
Your Honor, they served the executor by leaving with his wife. The state statute provided you had to serve the executor in hand. And they held that the federal rules of service circumvented the state rule that required that the executor be served in hand. There's very little difference between that and the Rule 3 of following the federal rules insofar as filing of a case commencing it and the service being sent out by the clerk to the marshal and served. Now, the Rule 4 gives the clerk the duty to give the stuff to the
Hannah
marshal.
Hannah certainly didn't say that if a state law requires service to toll the statute, that just the filing of the complaint will toll the statute, too. That's
no,
what Hannah held.
It didn't say that at all. It said that you didn't
have... That's what you're suggesting to us, that's what we should hold now.
No, sir, I'm saying that you should extend the Hannah rule to cover Rule 3 like the Second Circuit thinks it should be.
Does the Second Circuit think it should be, or do they think that's what Hannah did?
They think that Hannah overruled Reagan.
What's the virtue of uniformity on the procedural side if you're not going to have it on the substantive side?
Well, I guess the virtue would be that under the federal rules and under the federal system to make them the same. Each citizen, each state would have the same rights under the federal laws.
Well, that was the same justification that Justice Story advanced for Swift against Tyson in 1842, that the law does not lay down one rule in Athens and another rule in Rome, that the law should be uniform throughout the federal court system substantively. You don't agree with that, I think.
No, sir.
Why not?
Because that's the way...
Well, that's perhaps your answer to my brother Rehnquist's question, whether or not you agree or don't agree. That is the law.
Yes.
That under Erie Railroad against Tompkins, federal courts and diversity actions are required to apply state substantive law. It's equally well settled that when it's a matter of procedure, and everybody agrees it's a matter of procedure, then there's a uniform federal law applied in diversity cases in federal courts as well as in all other cases in federal courts.
Yes, sir.
Whether that's good or bad or philosophically supportable or not, you don't need to say. It is the law.
No, sir, but I do feel very strongly that service of summons and the rules about commencing an action are procedural.
Well, let's assume that Rule 3 does cover when an action is commenced for federal purposes. And that there's nothing that the state can say that would change that. If you file a complaint, the action is commenced. And the state doesn't argue with you about that. Or your opponent doesn't argue with you about that. He'll just say, however, that just isn't enough to start to toll the statute of limitations.
Well, the state gives you
60 days. Because the state law says you have to do something else, too.
Give you 60 days. Well, it gives you only...
They say our statute of limitations runs until you serve the complaint.
No, sir. It says it commenced upon filing a complaint, mm-hmm. but you must obtain service within 60
All right,
days
so
after the statute.
They say you've got, what was the statute of limitations in this case?
2 years.
You've got 2 years and 60 days.
Sir.
And you've got 2 years and 60 days to file the complaint, or to serve the complaint. If you don't serve it, you're out.
You've got to have...
Even if you, whether or not you've commenced the action.
That's correct. The federal rules don't say that, though. And I think we ought to apply the federal rules to this case.
Let's go back a step. What was the purpose of the diversity provision of the Constitution?
Well, I was...
Just to give what was thought to be a neutral forum.
Stop forum shopping.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Now, how does uniformity advance the idea of getting a neutral forum, one where citizens of another state were at least thought to have a better chance to get fair treatment in a federal court than in the local court? How is that advanced, that concept advanced, by saying that the service of process must be uniform?
It would be advanced that each person would know from whence they hailed that the same rules that applied insofar as procedure at their courthouse in Milwaukee would apply as far as procedure is concerned in a courthouse in Oklahoma City.
Now, more than that, Mr. Manders, is there also the point that you do have cases in the federal court that are not diversity cases? And I presume there's some advantage in having the same rules apply in federal trials, whether it raises a federal question or a state law question or a mixture of both.
Yes, sir.
And many cases are a mixture of both.
Yes, sir.
Isn't there another question here? If your federal rules apply, as I understand them, the duty to effect prompt service rested with the clerk of the court,
yes, sir,
delivering the summons to the marshal. How does the procedure work under Oklahoma law? Is it your burden under Oklahoma law?
You go up to the clerk's office and you file it, and there's a big basket there, and they pitch it in a big basket, and if you don't want it 3 or 4 days getting to the sheriff, you say, let me have that, and you take it out and give it to the deputy with maybe a $10
Are you talking about the federal court or the state court?
State.
In the state court, in other words, there is a responsibility of the plaintiff and his counsel to cause the marshal to be delivered to the to cause the summons to be delivered to the marshal?
No, sir, they'll put it in a basket, but it's a 2 or 3 day delay getting it to the sheriff. If you want it down to the sheriff that day, then you ask him to give it to you, and you walk down the basement and give it to the sheriff.
But you've told us already that you never got around that far. You didn't get it into the basket.
I thought we got it into the basket.
Well, you weren't in the state court.
No, sir. I was in federal court.
In the federal court, it's not your duty to put it in the basket, as I read the rule.
Well, if Rule 4 says it's not, it says the clerk shall cause it to be issued, sir, to given to the marshal. Now, I can't fathom and don't understand what could have happened to those summons, because the case was filed and we kept calling the clerk to ask, have we got service? And they'd say no. And then we found them in a file review. It's terrible.
Somebody thought he was in the state court.
Gentlemen, I think I've used a lot of my time, and if you'll tolerate me a second, I think this is the finest thing that's ever happened to me in the practice law, being allowed to come up here. And I had an old judge named Judge Mills, when I was a beginning lawyer, that said you didn't have to use all your time. He said, he reminded me of the picture of Lincoln. The little boy asked a teacher, said, how long shall I make Lincoln's legs? And she said, make them till they touch the ground. So unless there's further questions, I think my legs have touched the ground here.
Very well, Mr. Galt, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm J.M. Galt of the law firm of Looney, Nichols, Johnson & Hayes of Oklahoma City, representing the respondent Armco Steel Corporation and Ohio Corporation. The facts of the case are much is outlined by Mr. Manners. However, I would like to point out to the court that the Armco Steel Corporation retains a National Service Corporation as its resident agent in the state of Oklahoma, whose office is located within four blocks of the federal courthouse. And when service was affected 101 days after the statute of limitations had run, that was the very first notice that Armco had received of any claim by Mr. Walker against Armco for injuries that he allegedly sustained by reason of a defective nail. The petitioner in this case is a resident of the state of Oklahoma, took advantage of the diversity statute, and chose his forum in the federal court. The petitioner admits that had he filed this case in the state district court, and in fact it may have been an afterthought that he filed it in the federal court, his initial pleading is denominated as a petition rather than a complaint, and in a state court we would call our initial pleading a petition. He chose the federal court and has admitted that had he filed this in the state court and the same facts had existed, no service for 101 days, without question his case would have been barred and dismissed. But because he was fortuitous enough to file it in the federal court, we are now before this honorable body today asking and questioning whether or not Reagan should prevail as the rule covering this case. It is the position of the respondent, obviously, that Reagan is good law, and that if this court were to reverse Reagan and hold that Hanna applied and that the commencement of this action by filing with the clerk told the statute of limitations.
How is a federal matter, can you say that for state law purposes a statute of limitations is told?
Well, what the petitioner in this, I don't think you can. What the petitioner in this case is asking that you do is rule that by filing under Rule 3, that mere act tolls the statute of limitations.
And that the state is incompetent to require another step.
That's correct. And we obviously don't agree with that. We think that Rule 3 does not apply, that state law applies. And the state law is very, very clear that if you file your action within the appropriate statute of limitations, period, from the time that that statute runs, you then have 60 days to effect service. And there's a case of Taylor versus Taylor that Judge Doyle cites. It's out of our Court of Appeals that says that the filing commences the action, but there's one step more required to effect jurisdiction of the state district court, and that is service on the defendant. And it sets that other step that the petitioner in this case failed to take for reasons that he's been very honest with the court about today. The important thing that I see in this case is that should this court decide that Rule 3 commences an action to toll the limitations, what happens to the poor diversity defendant who has the same case filed in the state court? The same facts being present, no service for 101 days. And then mistakenly, the diversity defendant to obtain the benefits of the diversity rule removes this case to the federal court, files his motion to dismiss, and finds that it will be overruled. Because had he stayed in the state court, his motion to dismiss would have been sustained,
but because the federal court would hold.
He probably better get another lawyer if he does that.
Well, I would think so. But it's
a good defense, but that's hardly a legal argument, is it?
Well, I think it is, because isn't the object of Erie and Thompson, Tompkins, to avoid forum shopping and to avoid inequitable.
There wouldn't be any need for forum shopping there. All he has to do is go in and to get the case dismissed as a matter of state law.
Well, I agree, Your Honor.
And we have to presume people are going to act in their best interest, I would assume.
Yes. Yes.
So far as you know, counsel, is there any provision in the federal rules that sets a time limit on actual service on the party defendant once the complaint is filed? Supposing this complaint had or summons hadn't been filed for 6 years after the complaint had been filed in court. Would the federal rules have nonetheless hold it to be a good complaint?
Mr. Justice Rehnquist, the procedure in that case would be that had the summons not been issued for 6 years, we had no similar statute, the defendant would most likely file a motion under Rule 41 to have the case dismissed for a lack of diligent prosecution. I believe that's the correct rule number.
How would he ever know there was a case if he hadn't been served?
He would not know that there was a case until some point in time, 6 years later.
I assume you'd say, that one of the functions of the pleadings is to give him notice.
But he would never have that until he was served.
So that he can assemble his evidence and get ready to protect.
That's correct, Mr. Chief Justice. But I thought that Mr. Justice Rehnquist's question was, what if the summons was not served for 6 years? We would not know. We would not know now that we had been sued if we had not finally been given service.
Mr. Gall, can I ask you a question or two about the Oklahoma practice? Because I've been a little confused. I thought I heard some argument to the effect that as a matter of Oklahoma law, this action was commenced, but then there just wasn't service within 60 days. That's not right, is it? The action was not commenced as a matter of Oklahoma law, as I read the statute.
Well,
it says it commenced as to each defendant at the time of the summons is served on him. Isn't that right?
That is what 12 OS 97 says, Mr. Justice Stevens. But the Taylor versus Taylor case that is cited in the Tenth Circuit opinion would indicate that Oklahoma would say that it was commenced when the petition was filed or the complaint, but that to toll the statute of limitation.
It was commenced at that time if service was made within 60 days?
Yes. Well, I think what Taylor says is that the case is commenced for the purpose of commencing. Let's say that commencing, the word commencing means filing. The case was filed. But.
Well, that's not what the statute says. The Oklahoma statute says shall be deemed commenced upon service of summons, as I read it.
I agree with what Your Honor.
Isn't that the way it's construed in Oklahoma?
The Taylor case.
Is the Taylor case, I don't recall.
It's a state case, and it's really a state court of appeals case.
Yeah.
But it seems to say that you file your case, and that means commence with the connotation of the word file, and then a second step is required in that the plaintiff must effect service to give the court jurisdiction. Within 60 days, otherwise.
And the second step is required for what to have occurred, for the action to have been commenced?
Yes, to give the court jurisdiction to toll the statute of limitations.
What does the statute of limitations say?
The statute of limitations says that there should be 2 years from the time the injury occurs to file the action.
Is that what it says, file?
The action or commence the action.
Does it say file, or what does it say?
Your Honor, I can't.
Because I think that's rather important is what the statute of limitations requires to toll the statute. If it required service of process, I wouldn't think there would be much of an argument. But it says commencement of action, that's another matter.
Our statute says you have 2 years.
What does
for
it say?
Bringing a personal injury action.
bringing it?
I'm not sure what the exact wording.
I can't find it in any of the briefs or papers here.
It's never come up. We've talked about 12OS 97.
Well, why wouldn't it come up? Because that's the question: is whether if the state said you only told the statute of limitations by painting the state capitol red, it wouldn't help you to commence the action in federal court.
No.
And if it says, if it's a statute of limitations, that this is, the statute runs until you serve the complaint, is that what it says?
No. I think it's best that we supply that to the court.
Well, we got it from the statute.
Sure. But our...
It's 95.
So does it help any... The district court said an action is commenced in state court when process issues, provided process... It actually served within 60 days.
Well, I think that's 12 OS 97.
No, that's the law, though.
That is correct.
But I
want
to know what the
correct.
Statute of limitations said.
That I cannot answer, Your Honor. In the position of the respondent, we believe that Reagan and Hanna, the vernacular of our diplomatic corps, can peacefully coexist. I think that Reagan looks to the state law to determine what it takes to toll the statute of limitations, while Hanna is a service case dealing with what is necessary under the federal rules to affect actual service or process.
What about page 3 of the opinion of the Tenth Circuit in the petition for writ of certiorari? I think it's probably A-3. Where it cites Oklahoma statute annotated Title 12, Section 97, an action shall be deemed commenced within the meaning of this article. And then it goes on to say an attempt to commence an action. Is that the...
No, that's not the...
That is not the actual statute of limitations article. Yeah, but the Oklahoma court has construed 97 to be an integral part of the actual statute that created the plaintiff's right in this case.
Mr. Gall, let me, since we don't have the statute of limitations before us, assume for a moment it provides, it runs until, the action must be commenced within 2 years. What is your position as to the time, if ever, when the action against your client was commenced?
The action against my client was not commenced until we were served with summons some 101 days after the statute of limitations had run.
If you had been served, say, 35 days after the complaint was filed, you would say the action was commenced on that 35th day. Is that right?
I would think for the purposes of filing my answer that I would calculate from the 35th day.
So in other words, your view is that the action is commenced upon the date of service. If that is true, I fail to see any relevance whatsoever to the 60-day provision in the Oklahoma statute. It's either commenced when the complaint is filed, which a federal rule provides and you disagree with, and so does Reagan, or alternatively, it's commenced upon service or attempt to make service.
Well, I think
you say it's the latter, and your opponent says the former. So why do we have to look at the 60-day problem?
Well, because our legislature, in whatever wisdom, has said we're going to give you 2 years to file a lawsuit, and you must effect service within 60 days from that date. And if you do not effect service within 26 months from the date of the injury...
All that means is that your statute of limitations, instead of being 24 months long, is 26 months long. But you still have to commence the action within the 26 months.
That's correct. But you've got to effect service.
Because commence, for your purposes, is being served. That's what you're arguing.
That's correct.
On the other hand, if commenced isn't in a federal lawsuit means filing the complaint, we don't have to worry about 60 days either. I just don't see how the 60 days affects the case.
Well, if you don't... If this court were to hold that mere filing of the complaint told the statute of limitations, then we're going to have different results obtaining in the state court and the federal court.
But, Mr. Gaul, it's not a question of tolling the statute of limitations. The action would have been commenced within the statutory period if that is an adequate commencement of the action. There's no question of tolling. The question is, did they commence the action before the statute ran?
Well, I suppose the question is, what does the word commence mean?
That's the issue. That's what I suggest.
And Rule 3 does not say that commencement within the meaning of that word,
Rule 3
is
perfectly clear. It says it commences when you file a complaint, but you just say it doesn't apply.
That's correct.
Well, you say Rule 3 doesn't say that commencing an action stops the statute of limitations or means that after that time, if it was filed within the statute of limitations has no more applicability.
I think that's what I'm saying.
I'm not sure. The question certainly wasn't too clear, but what you're saying, as I understand it, is that the commencing of the action doesn't put the statute of limitations out of the picture under Rule 3, even though the action was commenced within the appropriate statutory period.
That's correct.
I was interested in your response to one of the questions where you said that for purposes of filing an answer, you would compute from the date of service. That doesn't really answer the question as to when the action is commenced, for me. And
I
see where it's for purposes of filing a responsive pleading that you would compute from the date of service, as distinguished from the date of commencement of the action, if it relates back under Oklahoma practice. And somewhere in these briefs, I had the impression that isn't there a state court holding that it does relate back?
No. I don't believe so, Mr. Justice Blackmun, but in doing the research and preparation for this argument, it appeared to me that the drafters of the rules, when they looked at Rule 3, thought about putting a proviso in there that filing the complaint would toll any statute of limitations problem. They thought better of it and did not include that. Some of the writers have said that the word commencement is in 3 is 4 is in the rules to have a figure to calculate time from. The only thing I can relate to answer the question is that the Oklahoma statute says that the action is commenced when you're served, and for my purposes of as a trial lawyer, a defense lawyer, of when is the action commenced? It's commenced on me when I receive service, and that's when I start my preparation for a defense.
Well, conceivably, it might commence for one purpose under the statute of limitations and another purpose in terms of totaling your time, determining your time to respond.
Yes, sir.
On the matter of supplying this information, while it's true we have the statutes available, you're both Oklahoma lawyers. You submit whatever you wish to submit on it as promptly as possible.
Thank you.
Section 95, two sections ahead of this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You perhaps can do that before you leave the building.
Yes, sir, we will. Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice, and thank you for permitting me this opportunity.
Would we furnish it to the clerk? Furnish that statute to the clerk.
That's right. Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until tomorrow.